There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
NFL Live on the air and ready with every angle of the mega Michael Thomas extension. Adam Schefter broke the news. He joins us live. Plus, a report from NFL Nation's Mike Triplett, live from New Orleans. And it's all in the family inside the relationship between Thomas and his uncle Keyshawn Johnson. Key will also join us live to react to the news. Another day, another $100 million deal. Lots to get to today with training camp in full swing. With Chris Mortensen, Damian Woody, and Mike Tannenbaum, I'm Susie Kalber. So let's get right to it, the nuts and bolts of this mega Michael Thomas deal. The Saints signed their star wide receiver to a five-year, $100 million extension through 2024. The deal contains $61 million guaranteed, and it makes Thomas the league's highest-paid wideout at $20 million per year in new money. He is now the highest-paid non-quarterback offensive player in NFL history. With the extension, Thomas passes Odell Beckham Jr. as the highest-paid wide receiver. He is also the first non-QB offensive player to get paid $20 million per year. For more on how the deal got done, we say hi to Adam Schefter, who broke the news this morning. So, Adam, what was the expectation for how big this extension could be?
Well, Susie, the holdout didn't exactly wind up getting Michael Thomas a lot of extra money. All along, the Saints were prepared to go to about $19 million a year. So by holding out, he gets an extra $1 million a year, which by his estimation was worth it. But he was getting itchy. He wanted to come in, and he made it very clear to his group that today, with the Saints being off, was the day that he wanted this deal wrapped up. And there wasn't that much negotiating to have to do from the time that he held out when the Saints were at $19 million a year on average to the time this morning that they agreed to a deal that basically comes in at $20 million a year on average, worth up to at least with all the incentives factored into the deal. Michael Thomas gets what he wants, and the Saints get what they want, which is to have this holdout behind them, the distraction behind them, and ready to roll as they believe they can compete to win that division, go far in the playoffs, and possibly even make it to the Super Bowl. And now that Michael Thomas's deal is done, of course, all other eyes will be on the other wide receivers, Julio Jones in Atlanta, Amari Cooper in Dallas, maybe even A.J. Green in Cincinnati. But the truth is, I don't think that Michael Thomas's deal ever was going to affect Julio Jones' deal very much.
All right, well, we'll get to all that. But, Adam, you know, just listening to GM Mickey Loomis, to Sean Payton, even Drew Brees over the last couple days, it seems sort of matter-of-fact that the deal would get done. Was there ever really any concern there?
No, in fact, I think the feeling around the league, Susie, had been that of the five veteran holdouts, that this was clearly going to be the first deal that got done. And they've been close all along. For the last few days, it was just a question of Michael Thomas being comfortable enough to sign off on the deal. Like we said, the numbers were basically the numbers. They didn't change all that much. He got some incentives, some goodies mixed in to bring up the average per year, to get it to that $20 million a year that's being reported. That's what the deal is worth up to. So, again, he's happy. But early this morning, the Saints were on the phone with his agents, David Malgita, Andrew Kessler from Athletes First. They got that deal finally agreed to. Michael Thomas now can report to the Saints. And, again, to your point, no, I don't think there was ever a question that this deal was going to get done. I think the real question is on some of these other holdouts and when those deals get done.
Exactly. And now, who will be next? Okay, thanks, Adam. But for now, great reaction on Twitter regarding this. LeBron tweeting about the news. Congrats, little bro. Well-deserved. Keep going and settle for nothing less than greatness. And Thomas responded, noted. All right, so we all agree, completely deserving. How much would you have paid him?
That's about the right number. When you look at the impact that Michael Thomas has on the New Orleans Saints offense, you go back over the last 18 years. Last year, 85% of the throws that Drew Brees threw to Michael Thomas were completed, which is by far the highest completion percentage. So you take Michael Thomas outside of that offense, they're really going to struggle. Their next best two targets are Jared Cook at tight end and Alvin Kamara, the running back. So $20 million a year in this day and age, that's about the right number for somebody that's so impactful like Michael Thomas.
There is nothing surprising about this deal. And in the deal, when we see the details, it'll actually come in between 19 and 20 million. But that five-year, $100 million headline looks good. And that's, you do those things for the players like this. This guy's never made $1 million in base salary in his first 3 years in the league. He was a second-round draft pick. And you look at the numbers, so the Saints are glad to pay him this money. This is where the money was going to come into, and it doesn't surprise me that he was itching to get in there on an off day so he can get going and playing football again for the Saints. So I don't see this as any surprise, either the number or the timing of it.
Right. You mentioned Cook, but he's kind of an unknown at this point, just how he's going to mix in there. I mean, the real known and the great connection is with Breeze.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now we're talking about a nice little window. And there's got to be a sense of urgency. Obviously, Drew Brees is 40 years old. Now you lock in Michael Thomas into the mix, who was by far and away his top target in that offense. And listen, moving forward, you're the New Orleans Saints. Thomas now. They have everything in front of them. Defense, offensive line, added Jerry Cook in the offseason at tight end. Obviously, you got Michael Thomas back in the mix. It's now or never. We've seen two consecutive years where they've had what we call these catastrophic plays that's happened against New Orleans Saints. So at some point soon, it's time to break through and get to the Super Bowl.
You know what's so interesting? I promise you, here's what Mickey Loomis, the general manager, and Sean Payton are feeling right about now. They're going to feel good for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then they're going to be like, all right, now we got to go deal with Drew Brees and Teddy Bridgewater. Two quarterbacks, they like both of them. And ideally, they'd love to keep both of them again. So what's so challenging about these jobs are you feel great, you get your star receiver in the fold, and that feels good for about 5 minutes, and now it's on to the next thing.
You know, all upside, because even Breeze talked about, you know, he knew the Thomas deal would get done, and he had some quality time with some of the younger guys that they want to mix into this offense as well. Can a wide receiver really be the centerpiece, do you believe, of this offense?
Yeah, again, the way they're constructed, he really is. Drew Breeze had 32 touchdown passes last year. You take Michael Thomas out of this offense, they are a lot easier to defend. So his value, again, it does approach $20 million a year. And I think he is, of all the players on that team, besides the quarterback, the hardest to replace.
Centerpiece? Come on, Damian.
Mike, can we talk for a minute right now? Yeah, I mean, listen, I love Michael Thomas. There's no question. He is a catching machine. But you can't sit here and tell me that Michael Thomas is more valuable than Alvin Kamara. I'm sorry. When you talk about Alvin Kamara, first of all, he's more versatile than Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas can catch everything, but Alvin Kamara is the more explosive player on that offense. You take Alvin Kamara away from the New Orleans Saints, that's a different offense that we're talking about here with the New Orleans Saints. So if I had to take one or the other, give me Alvin Kamara.
Running and receiving, I agree with Damian. And don't forget that offensive line, which is truly one of the three or four best in the league.
Right. And when Kamara's time comes, too, I mean, they admit they didn't know how good of a runner he was going to be.
But Michael Thomas, he was a third-round draft pick. Thomas was a second-round draft pick. They got bargain years out of these guys.
He's chomping at the bit. Go ahead, Mike. Let me hear it.
I like Alvin Kamara. He is a good player, but he hasn't been a full-time star yet. They had Mark Ingram, and while everything is encouraged, he has all the skill sets that you like. To be a 16-game star at running back, Damian, as we know, is a challenge. So taking nothing away from the player or his talent, Michael Thomas has done it year in and year out. The only grade we can give Alvin Kamara in terms of durability is a grade of incomplete.
You want me to tell you what else is a challenge? Trying to match up with Alvin Kamara as a defensive player. I mean, you're talking about a guy who can line up in the backfield. You can split him out, coming out of the backfield, running routes. How many guys can really match up with Alvin Kamara in those particular roles? I don't see it. Every week I watch New Orleans Saints, you see Sean Payton dialing up Alvin Kamara number again and again. To me, he's the indefensible guy on that offense.
They're no fun to play. They're not going to be any fun to play for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a fine.
That's a fine.
That's Alvin Kamara. That's Alvin Kamara's agent, Polly.
Thank you.
Did Steph call me just now?
Hey, before we move on to holdouts, Adam mentioned Julio Jones watching this next in line. Do you believe that to be true?
I don't believe Julio Jones was watching this. Julio is quiet, but he is a savvy businessman. And there's no question that he knows he's going to – his line is beyond $20 million. Arthur Blank, the owner, doesn't like to let any of these guys go. Now, he's got 2 years left on his contract. You got some people in the front office who may say, well, you know, we got to get a discount because of that 2 years. No, you make exceptions for guys like Julio Jones, and I think Arthur Blank is going to make that happen, even though Julio is adamant he won't play in preseason.
Yes, we will not
and I don't think we will see him in preseason. I think he gets his number, and if not, if he doesn't have his number by the start of the year, there will be trouble.
Okay, something to keep an eye on. Right now, let's focus on this holdout. So with Michael Thomas now disappearing from the holdouts list, four high-profile holdouts remain. There's Melvin Gordon, Yannick Ngakoue, Trent Williams, and Zeke Elliott. Let's start there. Zeke Elliott continues the holdout as he hopes to become one of the highest-paid running backs in the league, working out in Cabo as his teammates train in Oxnard. Cowboys did sign Alfred Morris to a 1-year deal as insurance for Elliott in case the holdout extends. Jason Garrett, diplomatic as always.
Yeah, no real reaction to that. We're focused on the guys that we have here and what we need to do to be better every day. You know, what I know about Zeke is Zeke loves football. Zeke works very hard at playing football. He's competitive. He's passionate. He's had a big impact on our team over the course of the last 3 years. So, you know, we trust him as a player. We trust him as a person. And we'd love to get him back here as soon as he can. And we trust that he's going to be ready to go.
Any progress here, Morton?
Not yet. But when Jerry Jones said, you know, that a team doesn't need an NFL rushing champion to win the Super Bowl, except when you were the Cowboys and Emmitt Smith. Jerry actually, he understands. Zeke Elliott is the MVP of this offense. And the other thing, he's 23 years old, and he's going to get his money. And I think he'll get it this year before he reports to camp. He is 23. He's at his peak. And one thing that Jerry has told me before, he is feeling his own mortality as an owner. And it happens to you when you start getting older. And so he wants to get back to the Super Bowl. And this team, we believe, is Super Bowl ready, but not without Zeke Elliott. And Zeke's going to get his money.
You want to make your running back point here? Heck yeah.
Oh,
well, these guys, especially.
Absolutely, because
you're running a team with no salary cap here.
Zeke's more valuable.
I'm spending all the money here. I'm spending all the money. But listen, when you talk about the Dallas Cowboys, this is a team that's built around the running back.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
We talked about the offensive line. And the reason that defense is pretty good, you know why? Because a guy like Zeke Elliott is running football, eating up time of possession, which keeps those guys fresh. So he is the centerpiece of that offense. As Zeke goes, guess what? Dak Prescott goes, Amari Cooper goes, the defense goes. So they need to get him in the fold.
But I think sequencing is very important here, and here's why. You have a starting quarterback in Dak Prescott who's been very successful, who's done everything right, not only on the field but off the field. You have a wide receiver in Amari Cooper that once you traded for him last year, you were 7-2, and you were first in the NFL on third down offense. Another one that has handled everything the right way. If you reward Zeke Elliott first before taking care of those two players, in my opinion, you're sending the wrong message to the locker room that what Ezekiel Elliott's done off the field is okay. And if you look at Elliott's situation, they have him under contract this year. They have his fifth-year option, and they can franchise him. While he should be rewarded for his on-field production, those other two players, in my opinion, should go first. And I would give Elliott a chance to earn more money, but understand that he's still under contract for 2 more years.
Here's one thing about Zeke, though, like in terms of people who are worried about what you've done off the field. They're protected. If you sign a big contract and you get that guaranteed money, what happens if you get in trouble off the field? The contract language protects the team on it. And I think that they know, and as I said, Jerry understands that the window is closing for him as an owner to get back to the Super Bowl. And I don't think they truly believe they can do it without Zeke Elliott.
And the last point I'll make is, we know that in the NFL, not every player is on the same playing field, okay? So when you talk about, well, what do the guys in the locker room think? It really doesn't matter, okay? Because
they want them.
There's a meritocracy in the National Football League, and the guys who butter your bread? Those are the guys that's going to take precedent. In this particular situation, guess who it is? It's Zeke Elliott.
Yeah, and the meritocracy starts at the quarterback position. You drafted a winning quarterback who can make plays not only with his arm, his feet, who's been exemplary on the field.
Is he winning without Zeke?
Yeah, I think they can win without. Now, they're not as good. They're not as good without him, but he is a good winning NFL quarterback. And with Amari Cooper, they are still a good team.
So they win the Super Bowl without Zeke.
I didn't say that.
Okay. I'm just get some clarification.
And the flip side of that, where's Zeke Elliott going? He's under contract for two more years.
The sequence may turn out the way you say it, but it all could happen before the season starts. And but they're a cash-rich team, and they got to play with the cap a little bit. But Jerry does have a lot of cash.
How about if we just accelerate that sequencing?
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, exactly.
Done.
And Chris, to your point, though, while the guarantee is void because of off-field issues, getting signing bonus money back is very difficult. And I'm sure one of the big issues in Zeke Elliott's negotiations, and I have been there, is how much money is up front and how much is going to be guaranteed down the road. Because you're right, it can void. But you know Zeke Elliott and his agents are pounding the table, more money up front, more money up front. And if I'm the Cowboys, I'm proceeding with extreme caution.
Bengals wide receiver A.J. Green expected to miss multiple regular season games after undergoing ankle surgery Tuesday morning. Green was carted off the field during the team's first practice of the preseason just a few days ago. So, I mean, understatement. This has kind of been a brutal beginning for new head coach Zach Taylor, who lost his top draft pick, Jonah Williams, and now A.J. Green. But, Mike, let's start here. It isn't even so much about how he got hurt, it's where he got hurt.
Yeah, the optics on this guy's is awful. The Cincinnati Bengals wanted to have a practice at the University of Dayton, which this time of year, that happens often where teams want to expand their fan base. So you're A.J. Green, you're going to the last year of your contract, you're doing exactly what the organization asked, which is to participate in this practice on a field which, again, they're saying it was okay, and maybe it was, but the locker room doesn't feel that way. Now you want a new contract, and My production's down. I'm not playing because I did exactly what you asked. So I'm not going to take less money because I'm hurt this year because I did what you asked me to do. And that's going to be a very difficult conversation between A.J. Green's agent and the Bengal front office.
Even though they have a pretty good base of talent, their personnel staff does a good job on talent. Going back to last year, Andy Dalton was having a heck of a year until the injury to A.J. Green. And we look at this division, we see the Steelers, we see the Browns, and the Browns, I think, are for real. And certainly the Ravens are always in contention. So, you know, this to me, you lose A.J. Green, and they say two games, at least a couple games is what Zach Taylor said. I would say, and a couple more after that. So that's the first month of the season without probably your best offensive player.
Yeah, look, just looking at the graphic, Tyler Boyd, he's a rising star. At least there's some optimism there, right?
Yeah, there is, but they have that other injury. Like you said, Jonah Williams, the left tackle. And they expect a lot from Joe Mixon this year in the backfield. So, no, they're not giving up. And they still have good talent, but that's a big loss.
I work with Zach Taylor in Miami. He is a bright, young, capable coach who a year ago wasn't even a coordinator. And now he's an NFL head coach, and he has to deal with arguably his best player being hurt in these circumstances. That's a huge challenge for a coach who's just trying to establish himself.
Here's the problem with the A.J. Green injury. So they're projecting missing two games, which Moore's saying it's probably going to end up being more. Now you got to worry about conditioning. By the time you get into shape, because you're spending the whole time rehabbing, so by the time you really up the speed, you're already in October.
Yep.
And where does that lead the Bengals at that point in a division with the other three teams seemingly on the rise?
Monday Night Football, end of the month against the Steelers. I was kind of hoping, you know. Selfishly, that he would be back. Right, last season he missed 7 games due to injury.
Mike Thomas, what a grab at the front pylon!
That was a crazy good catch by Mike Thomas.
Touchdown, Mike Thomas!
Why didn't get paid big bucks?
He don't get paid big bucks yet.
Catch made in the end zone, Michael Thomas, touchdown!
I got the athlete's way.
I'm feeling like a rock star. My number's called, we'll make a play no matter how I did.
Unporks one toward Thomas, caught touchdown, New Orleans. Michael Thomas, touchdown.
I just had to rise up to the moment, respond.
And today he is the highest paid wide receiver in history. That success is no surprise to those familiar with the Thomas family tree. His career influenced by our very own Keyshawn Johnson, or more simply, as Thomas knows him, Uncle Keyshawn. The two sat down for this feature back in 2018.
What's up, man? Gritty. What's up, man?
So now the roles reverse. Now I get to ask you about being the star receiver in the NFL and what it's like to be, I guess, the poster boy of the offense.
You definitely set the foundation. You showed me what this game brings you, the things, the places it could take you, the relationships you could build, the doors it could open outside, stuff like that, and I was paying attention.
Allen Iverson was your favorite sports hero growing up as an athlete, not me. Like, I'm thinking, okay, I'm his uncle. He gotta say me, but you say Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson, I just liked him, how he competed. He wasn't the biggest. He may have not had all the attention, but he was going to make sure at the end of that game he knew his name. And then he kind of played with a chip on his shoulder. You know, he played kind of greedy, and I like that about him.
I remember you used to call me and asking me stuff about playing. I'm like, man, go find it on YouTube. Is there any moments that stick out to you about having an opportunity to maybe find things around the house or whatnot?
My grandmother, she used to record, like, back in the day when she would have these tapes. It would have, like, three games on it. And I remember just watching you play.
Back to throw, fires on the slant. Touchdown, Tampa Bay, Keyshawn Johnson.
And I probably didn't know exactly what was going on, but I was watching to see when he get the ball. I remember when he scored your first touchdown, he slammed your helmet. I remember all that. A lot of people, you know, they don't have an uncle like you to show them that example. So I feel like that was a key part to my success because I was able to see you play the game. I was see you play at the highest level. I was able to see you play, win the Super Bowl.
Breeze in the shotgun. And looking for Thomas, who dives at the two and falls on it at the one.
That was a crazy good catch by Mike Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
He's something else.
That's why they get paid big bucks.
He don't get paid big bucks yet. He's a second-year guy.
Coach Payton, are there any similarities direct? You know, you had me that Mike and myself remind you of something.
Absolutely.
Sluggo scene, whatever.
Well, it starts with traffic. Yards after the catch, slant route runner, you know, basics. There's some receivers you want to stay away from the lions and tigers inside. You know, like Bill used to say, yes. There's some receivers you want to keep outside with the gazelles. Uh-huh. But then it's important to have those receivers that can get inside and make the tough catch around the noise.
Back shoulder throwing. Michael Thomas makes a great catch.
Not only did you play the same position, but the same spot on the field in the position at X. And the same type catches and the same type contested throws. And these catch radiuses is
yeah, I know.
Just like yours. There's so many similarities that way.
Is he as big a pain to you as I was?
Differently. He just expects so much of himself. And I think I remember there's a savviness to you because I had you later in your career. And so your issues were different than his issues. All right. And yet I'll take both of them.
Do you see any similarities at all?
I like to talk when I'm out there. I like to.
But what makes you think I used to talk?
I mean, I watch it. I mean, it's, you can turn on YouTube. You can hear you. You could, you know, I could do my research and hear how I used to talk to people.
Hey, Peter, this ain't Florida State against Maryland now, dog.
And then also, people tell me too, ex-vets, they tell me like, man, your uncle, man, he's crazy. He told me this one time. He told me this. And they remember.
Shut your up. All that screaming. Fake John Randall.
Do you realize how lucky you are to have Drew Brees as your quarterback opposed to when I played? I went through like, I don't know, man, 14. My best two guys was Vinny Testaverde and Brad Johnson. But you got Drew Brees.
Yeah, it's, man, every day. That's why I take a lot of pride in my position, my job, my assignment, being in the right place at the right time because I know that guy is going to be at the right place at the right time. He's going to be the same guy. He's going to be that Hall of Fame quarterback, Drew Brees. He's going to be consistent. He's going to be accountable. He knows what he wants.
Caught by Thomas, and he's into the end zone. Touchdown.
You now force me to become the second best wide receiver in the family. 196 receptions in your first 2 years, being the top out of any receiver in NFL history. What does that do to you, Mikey?
It's a blessing. It shows, like, you know, all the extra stuff I did on the side, the stuff I did when no one was looking, discipline, and keep going, eliminate the distractions, keep pushing through, and then your name rises to the top. And I feel like I take a lot of pride in that.
What do you think my mom is saying today as she watch you?
Stay focused. Whatever I'm doing, keep doing. But she's saying keep going, take it to the top, because she saw you go to the top, and I feel like she's watching down right now, and she wants to see me take it to the top, too.
And in the wake of Thomas's new mega contract extension, we welcome in Uncle Keith. So, Keyshawn, what was your reaction when you heard about this deal?
I was happy for him. I text him and said, congratulations. And, one of the things he texted me back, Suze, is just said, you know, long time coming. But one of the things, I was with him on draft day when he got drafted, and, you know, he's a little disappointed, like most kids are when they don't go in the first round, when they come out of college. They, you know, they think they're better than everybody else, which is true. I felt that he was the best receiver in that year's class of the draft, and he went in the second round. So when you look and you watch some of the receivers that went in front of him, one of my messages to him was, it's not where you start, it's where you finish at. And right now, he's above all of them, so I'm happy for that.
You know, Drew Brees talks about Michael's competitive drive and that sometimes at practice they have to force him to cool it a little bit. What impresses you the most as he goes into his fourth year?
Well, that's one of the things. I think, you know, for me, when I played, that was one of the things that I had to do. I had to dial back, whether it was me taking our regular team reps as well as scout team reps. And I told him, even in college, you just continue to take reps on scout team if you can. When you get into pros, make them snatch you out of practice. Make them tell you you have to stop, because work ethic is one thing. The more you can do, as you know, in the normal work field, the more you can do, the better off you'll be. And I think showing them that he's a relentless worker and he's going to constantly be there, that's something that coaches appreciate, general managers appreciate, that you're going to be with them standing there on game day, on the sideline, not just standing there just to have the uniform on.
And what's your perspective on just how fortunate Michael is to be on this team?
Well, I think when you go back to his draft and you look at where he was drafted, a lot of guys get disappointed again, Susie. But when you land with Sean Payton and you land with Drew Brees and you land with Mickey Loomis, and you know they're going to put players around you to make the team better because they've done it before. They've been in the playoffs. They've been in the Super Bowls. I mean, you just got all the best of both worlds. I mean, you got the Hall of Fame quarterback. You got a potential Hall of Fame head coach. You got all sorts of other players that have been around you that are just young and exciting. And so, you know, 2 years in a row, they got kind of sucker punched out of the playoffs. They're a team that is right there, that should be right there in the end again next year, or this year, better yet.
Yep, be exciting to watch. We appreciate the insight from Uncle Key.
Thanks. No, don't call me that. You make me sound old.
You are.
We're all old. So it's been a while since a wide receiver has led the league in receiving yards and won a Super Bowl in the same season. The last wide receiver to do that was Jerry Rice back in 1994. Since the merger, it has only happened 3 times. Jerry Rice managed to do it twice, and Drew Pearson accomplished it once, which, I don't know, leads us back to the animated discussion that we had at the top of the show, which can the foundation piece of an offense like this really be the wide receiver?
When I think of foundation, I always look in the trenches first, and quarterback. So, and when you look at the Saints on offensive line and defensive line,
he's getting a massage for that.
They're among the tops in the league. So the foundation to me is there, and Thomas is just a very instrumental piece for that franchise quarterback.
I think he's giving the wrong guy the massage. He made a comment. I'm the one that paid you, not him.
You did. My wife really thanks you for that. But continue.
All right. But as it relates to my, I will say this. Like, when you look at his production, his first 3 years, he has 321 receptions. The second most is Antonio Brown at 311. So, again, if anyone's earned this, it's certainly Michael Thomas. And, again, taking nothing away from Alvin Kamara, who I think is a very good player, Michael Thomas has done it. We're not projecting. We're not hoping. We're not saying that there's any issues in terms of potential durability issues, which we don't know with someone like Alvin Kamara. So he's checked every box, and he deserves this money. And he is, to me, the centerpiece of this offense, because without Michael Thomas, they are a much easier team to defend.
It is the story of the day. Michael Thomas, the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL, with Michael Thomas now disappearing from the holdouts list. 4 high-profile holdouts remain: Melvin Gordon, Yannick Ngakoue, Trent Williams, and Zeke Elliott. Where Zeke signing seems to be imminent, maybe not the case for Chargers running back Melvin Gordon. What are you hearing there?
I would say watch out for this one, because the word is that Gordon is set on taking this holdout into the season. I don't know that he'll have to take it into the season, because the Chargers are not a cash-rich team. Melvin Gordon has been a good back. I talked to somebody in the NFL today. He says, been a good back, really good back. He's only had one full season. That was 2 years ago. And the Chargers are not, a cash-rich team. I can see Melvin Gordon playing for another team before the season starts with a contract from that team, not necessarily the Chargers.
Listen, I was with Anthony Lynn and with the Jets, both Mike and I. And I can tell you, being a former running back himself, he'll find another running back. And that's not disparaging Melvin Gordon. But when you look at the big picture with the Los Angeles Chargers, Phillip Rivers is in his last year. Joey Bosa coming up. So you got to have some type of pecking order here. Who are you going to pay?
And if you're Tom Telesco, the general manager of the Chargers, you're looking across town at the L.A. Rams and the massive guarantee they gave Todd Gurley. It's going to give you pause for concern. And Mort, you already hit on it. Melvin Gordon's only played one full season. So there is some pause for concerns there. And this one, to me, really could get interesting over the next couple of weeks.
And they have been raving about Austin Eckler.
They have Justin Jefferson. They got a couple other guys, too.
All right, what are you hearing about Trent Williams, the left tackle for the Redskins?
Well, it just doesn't look like this is going to work for the two sides. So, I mean, clearly there are teams calling the Redskins about Trent Williams' availability in trade. To me, Bill Callahan, their veteran line coach, he certainly is panicking somewhat. Remember, when Trent Williams is on the field, he's one of the top two or three left tackles in football. Who did they draft in the first round this year? Dwayne Haskins, quarterback, a typical pocket quarterback. If Dwayne Haskins is going to get on the field any this year, it's not going to be good, even though they just signed Donald Penn without Trent Williams there, and I think they got problems, and I think he also is trade material.
This one is really difficult from a standpoint. You could have a disagreement over money, and at some point, reasonable minds can figure out a solution. If he doesn't trust the organization and the medical department, that's a tough bridge to cross.
I'm just going to put it plainly. If Trent Williams not there, I don't see Jay Gruden lasting past this year. That's how good he is as an offensive tackle.
Duly noted, biggest story of Redskins camp. Time to check in on the defending Super Bowl champs at camp in Foxborough, Massachusetts. That Super Bowl winning defense returns largely intact. Starters return. But wait, TB12 speaking for the first time today. A fixture at Patriots camp, Tom Brady, and also Mike Reese, who joins us live. So, Mike, this is the first time we've heard from Tom Brady in camp. How is he approaching this year differently?
Well, Susie, picture this scene after practice today. About 15 minutes after it was over, very few players out on the field, but a quarterback who turns 42 on Saturday was still out on the field, and he was working on throwing the football and then having a teammate come charging toward him with a blocking pad and then hitting him. This ties into something Brady worked on this offseason. He said he wanted to improve his strength because he wants to be able to absorb hits better. You listen to him talk, Susie. You watch him out in the practice field, and it's clear the competitive fire still burns.
I have a great time. I mean, football is... I love the sport. I love playing it since I was a kid. I think, you know, it's hard for me to imagine doing anything else in life. I love playing ball. So, you know, to still be out here at 41, you know, soon to be 42.
Without Rob, you know, Gronkowski, how much more significant does it feel this year to do that?
Yeah, he's a great player. And to replace great players, you know, it's not like you just pick another one off the tight entry, you know, you can't just go out back. You got to find guys that come in and want to put the work in, want to try to contribute. And, you know, between the guys we have out here now, which is Ben and Matt, Steven, Ryan Izzo, Lance, who, you know, we just got. I mean, those guys are trying to do everything they can do. So they're all new players. So we got to figure out how to get them used up to speed to what, you know, what our expectations are, the level of competition on a daily basis. We got a very good defense this year. You know, those guys are challenging us on every day. It's hard to, you know, complete passes on our secondary. I mean, that's just the reality. So it's actually great work for our offense to see how we measure up against a very good defense. And, days like today are frustrating for us.
This is a rare situation for Brady in that he enters the last year of his contract. He was asked how he feels about going year to year at this point in his career. And he said, you know what? We're all day to day. He said his approach is just to be the best player he can be today, and he said the rest should take care of itself.
That's all I could think of, too, is yeah, we're definitely all day to day. Right, thanks, Mike, as always. The Hall of Fame officially getting 8 new members on Saturday. This year, DB heavy class, 4 defensive backs, getting inducted into Canton, the most ever in a single class. Today, we are shining the spotlight on cornerback Ty Law. Law played 15 seasons in the NFL with the Patriots, Jets, Chiefs, and Broncos. He spent 10 seasons in New England, where his 36 interceptions is tied with Raymond Claymore for most in franchise history. He also won 3 Super Bowls, all with the Patriots. What's your Ty Law memory?
Well, today was one of the days I made the phone call to Bill Parcells, who was the New England Patriots coach when they drafted Ty Law in 1995. And he said, in 1996, the Colts drafted a guy named Marvin Harrison. And he can remember being at midfield before a game between the Colts and Patriots and calling Ty Law over and pointing to Marvin Harrison. He said, you see 88 over there? For the next 10 years, you'll be covering him. You better get the job done. You better get up in his face. And guess what? As Parcells pointed out, he says, all the pass interference stuff that we're still talking about today, it all started with Ty Law. As we know, eventually, the competition committee, headed by former coach GM Bill Polian, cracked down on pass on the contact with the receiver as a result of what Ty Law would do, as Bill Parcells once instructed, against Marvin Harrison.
Nice.
I was teammates with Ty Law with the New England Patriots, and I remember that fondly, playing against the Indianapolis Colts. And it seemed like every year in the AFC Championship game, and that was the main complaint. He literally changed the way the game is being played today. I mean, think about that. For a player to have that type of impact where the game has totally changed all because of your matchup with Marvin Harrison, that just goes to show you, I think, the respect and just the physical nature that Ty Law played the game at the cornerback position.
Yeah, and for me, it was 2005. I was at the New York Jets, and there was obviously this big Patriot-Jet rivalry, and Ty Law's available to be signed, so we signed him, and of course we feel like, well, that's going to weaken the Patriots and it's going to strengthen us here at the Jets. He had 10 interceptions that year, which is obviously a great number, but candidly, somehow, some way, the ball just would find Ty Law. And a lot of those interceptions were like rebounds off of missed foul shots, but you look back at 2005, it says 10 interceptions. So he gave us a great year that year. He had great ball skills as a corner.
Mm-hmm. Just can't wait to hear all the speeches on Saturday. Yeah. It's just such a great moment. We have more on this Hall of Fame class tonight on ESPN2 at 8:30 Eastern, a special look at all the enshrinees with Wendy Nix, Adam Schefter, Keyshawn Johnson, and Lewis Riddick. Don't miss it. That's tonight on ESPN2 at 8:30 Eastern. Sadly, a Hall of Famer gone today. Linebacker Nick Bonacani has died at the age of 78, an 8-time Pro Bowler and 5-time All-Pro. Bonacani was a 2-time Super Bowl champion with the Dolphins, played a pivotal role during the 1972 perfect season. Bonacani prominently featured as he and his teammates toasted each time it was clear they would remain the only perfect team, 17-0. Off the field, Bonacani will be remembered for his work on HBO's Inside the NFL, but mostly for raising more than $450 million for research into the treatment of spinal cord and brain injuries after his son Mark rendered quadriplegic playing football. Bonacani co-founded the Miami Project to cure paralysis. Nick Bonacani, a true hero of the game and in life, dead at the age of 78. Story of the day in the NFL, the Saints signed star wide receiver Michael Thomas to a 5-year, $100 million extension through 2024 today. The deal contains $61 million guaranteed, makes Thomas the league's highest paid wideout at $20 million per year in new money. He is now the highest paid non-quarterback offensive player in NFL history. As we say hi to NFL Nation Saints reporter Mike Triplett, who has been with the team all week. We know they're off today. But, Mike, why is Thomas worth $20 million per year to a Saints team that had a history of not paying skill position players in the Peyton Breeze era?
Well, Susie, he had a lot more leverage than guys like Jimmy Graham and Brandon Cooks, who the Saints somewhat felt were expendable and they could use those resources in other areas. Not only is Thomas a special player. Obviously, 321 catches in 3 years, by far the most in NFL history. His catch rate last year, the highest in decades from an NFL receiver. But the cupboard would be frighteningly bare without him. He had 90 catches more than any receiver or tight end on this team last year. And he's especially valuable to Drew Brees at age 40 because he catches a lot of those shorter and intermediate routes in traffic.
And beyond the obvious, I mean, why was it so important to get this deal done quickly?
Well, you've got the wide receiver landscape around the NFL, obviously. I think this would have been more complicated if Julio Jones had gone first, because Julio Jones will probably raise this bar even higher, but I think they settled into a nice round number, $20 million per year, $100 million total. Exact same numbers they settled with Drew Brees at in 2012 under similar circumstances.
Mike Triplett reporting on the biggest news of the day. Thank you, Mike. Drew Brees, Michael Thomas have been among the most productive quarterback receiver tandems. Over the last three seasons, Brees has completed 315 passes to Thomas, which is the most in the league during that time. Big Ben and former Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown come in at number two with 302 receptions. And rounding out top three, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, who have 283. Damian, big, big, big fan of wide receivers, as we've seen throughout the show. So we wanted you to rank the top duos. Go from 5 to 1, quarterback, wide receiver.
Of course, we're going to have the offensive lineman rank the wide receivers, but here we go. So, listen, at number five, I want to start with this duo right here, Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins. I think this duo has a chance to elevate as their careers move forward. The big thing about these guys, Deshaun Watson, one of the best dual-threat quarterbacks in the National Football League. And DeAndre Hopkins, seems like he's been, regardless of what the quarterback situation has been, he's always put up very productive numbers. The biggest issue with the Houston Texans, make sure that they can protect Deshaun Watson. If they can get the offensive line solidified, this group might elevate up a little bit more. At number four, listen, doesn't get much more reliable than Tom Brady, Julian Edelman. Listen, we could talk about flashier players as far as the wide receiver, but there's not many wide receivers out there that catches balls at more critical times in games. That's Julian Edelman. We've seen times throughout his time in New England where Rob Gronkowski has missed time, other pieces have been out, but the one steady component in that Patriots offense has been Tom Brady and Julian Edelman. So I got them at number four. At number three here, we got right here, this duo right here, Drew Brees and Michael Thomas. And listen, these guys have been prolific. I mean, you're talking about a duo that since they've come into the league since Michael Thomas is coming to the league in 2016, completed 315 passes of Michael Thomas. That's the most in the National Football League. I mean, you line him up in the slot, line him up outside. All he does is catch the ball. I think his catch percentage is like in the 80s. That's an absurd percentage of being able to catch the football. So I got Drew Brees and Michael Thomas at number three. At number two, I got these boys right here, Susie. These two, they're bad. Listen, Patrick Mahomes right now, you're talking about maybe the best quarterback in the league just going into year three. I mean, we all saw the MVP season that he had last year, 50 touchdowns over 5,300 yards. Tyreek Hill, maybe the most explosive, I call him offensive weapon, because regardless if you hand him the ball, he's playing his natural position at wide receiver, he has something that you cannot teach, speed. And he threads the defense every time he is on the field. And at number one, I'm going to go with Matty Ice and Julio Jones. I mean, these guys, when you talk about greatness, greatness to me is over a period of time. These guys have been doing it, seem like, for years now, where they've been putting up prolific numbers. I mean, we all know about the Super Bowl where they, you know, where they dropped the ball with that. But outside of that, I mean, these guys have been maybe the gold standard as far as quarterback, wide receiver duos in the National Football League. Okay, Mike, what you got to say? Go ahead. Let me hear it.
I would say stick with the offensive line.
Okay, go ahead.
How can you not take this guy right here and put him up there? I mean, we're talking about Tom Brady, the greatest player in the history of our sport. I don't care if it's Julian Edelman, Keenan Allen, whoever he's with. It's Tom Brady, and then it's everybody else. So I would start there by saying whoever you pair Tom Brady.
But we're not talking, but this is not a quarterback. This is quarterback and right. wide receiver.
But part of being a great quarterback is making whoever you're with better. So that's why I would put him one. And the only thing I would change here is I would put Matt Ryan and Julio Jones above Breeze and Thomas. It's close for me, but Matt Ryan and Julio Jones were in the Super Bowl just 2 years ago. And if that defense didn't have the injuries that they did, they may have been back there. Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, very interesting. I would leave them at number two. Big concern, obviously, is, you know, Tyreek Hill. Can we trust him off the field? Will he remain eligible for entire season, year in and year out? But Mahomes, to me, he has a chance to be the next Tom Brady of this group. And if we're talking about 3 years from now, I think Mahomes will be up there, and hopefully Tyreek Hill will still be with him. And the last change is I'm going to take Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, taking nothing away from DeAndre Hopkins. I think he's a great, great wide receiver. But again, to me, greatness is about making players around you better. Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. He'll make Davante Adams better. I still rather take Hopkins, but I can't take Watson over Aaron Rodgers.
I think I might have slipped in that Rivers Allen combo.
For who?
Into that five. Somewhere ooh, in the top five. Ooh.
I thought about this one long and hard because they've been really, really, really good. But forget Mike's list, okay? As far as my list is, it's almost like, well, who are you going to take out? It's really, really hard because all of these guys are deserving. But as far as my list is concerned, my biggest focal point was chemistry. Guys who played together, who have a rapport together. So some of these guys like, you know, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham Jr.
It's all potential.
It's all potential, right? It's right. paper, but we don't know what it's going to materialize into. Derek Carr, Antonio Brown, we don't know right now.
And what's great about our sport as fans of football, as we all are, in 5 years, we're going to be talking about Baker Mayfield, Andrew Luck, Patrick Mahomes, like the next generation of quarterbacks. It's so exciting and dynamic. There's so many great young players. Hopefully Tyreek Hill turns into an all-time great. T.Y. Hilton, best days are still ahead of him. So there's a lot of great players here with great futures as well.
You know, nothing against how sexy the offensive line is, but there's just something about talking quarterback, wide receiver, right? Get you fired up.
Listen, that's where do you win games at? Where do you win the
game? Damian won that game.
We win them in the trenches.
Win them in the trenches, baby.
That's right.
Andrew Luck's calf injury continues to linger. Still sitting out practice. Head coach Frank Reich explaining his star quarterback isn't ready to take the next step. The nagging calf injury has bothered Luck for the past 3 months. Here's Luck.
I've had images and x-rays and everything, and my Achilles is not at extra risk. There is no tear or swelling in there or anything that's indicated. But so it's a calf strain, and we're on our feet a lot. And I know to be the best quarterback I want to be, to help this team like I want to help them, I'm not looking for average. And if I'm going out here with pain, I'll be average. I will feel like an average quarterback, and I'll be an average quarterback. That's not good enough for me. That's not good enough for this club.
This is scary. How concerned should we be?
It sounds good from Andrew Luck's perspective in that same presser, he said he had emotional scars from not being honest and transparent going back to 2015 when he had the shoulder injury, he's had a lacerated kidney, not communicating those things. Sunday night, he went to Frank Wright, the Colts head coach, and said, this is not right. I need a couple more days. And I can verify through Chris Ballard, the general manager, the x-rays, the MRIs do not suggest that this is long-term. They don't want to mess with it. They were aware in spring, as they mentioned, that Kevin Durant in the NBA had a calf injury that turned Achilles. They're saying these MRIs show no threat of that, but they are going to be careful with this guy. And I think Andrew being honest about it and communicating it, he missed the whole season in 2017. And he's not going to let that happen again.
See, if I'm the front office, the coach, I'm ecstatic, to be honest with you, because most players are programmed to fight through it, fight through these injuries. But the fact that Andrew Luck has said, you know what, I'm the franchise. We go as I go. And if I'm not right, why put myself in harm's way that could jeopardize the organization? So to me, like, I would applaud Andrew Luck for coming forward and say, you know what, I need some time to really get this thing right.
You know, calf injuries, though, are tricky. It's not an injury that is always predictable or sometimes they linger. And as a quarterback, you throw with your legs, and it's a lower body injury for him. So, look, it's still late July. They're still playing time, but it's not an ideal body part for a quarterback to have.
Mm-hmm. And ultra, ultra cautious sounds pretty good right now.
Right.
More news from around the league. NFL Nation on location.
Replacing Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell might just come down to the Pittsburgh Steelers' defense. And quarterback Ben Roethlisberger likes the sound of that. Big Ben said the D has been flying around all training camp faster than he's seen in a long time. All 11 players threw the football every play. And I just spoke with defensive tackle Javon Hargrave. He told me his defensive line should be the best in the NFL by season's end. We just have to show it, he said. And right behind him is first-round linebacker Devin Bush. The early returns on him have been very positive. Already, he's earned starter's reps.
With Odell Beckham Jr. on board, the expectations for this Browns offense are sky high. And though it hasn't always been perfect this training camp, it has at times been spectacular. During a two-minute drill over the weekend, the offense went down the field in three plays, capped with a Baker Mayfield touchdown pass to Jarvis Landry. Mayfield told me that the confidence level is just different than it was at this time last year. Mayfield's development and the talent around him are big reasons why.
5 practices into training camp, it's clear who has been the best quarterback for the Giants. It's the quarterback entering his 16th season, Eli Manning. After an offseason where he dipped into the baseball world and hired a new trainer to improve his velocity, he's throwing the ball well. He's also taken every first-team rep. So much for a quarterback competition with Daniel Jones. The number 6 overall pick is experiencing the normal rookie ups and downs. But as several teammates have told me, they've been very impressed with how he's thrown the deep ball.
Next stop on the training camp tour, Green Bay. All eyes continue to be on the first new offense Aaron Rodgers has been a part of installing since he became a pro. Lots to mesh together. Dan Braziano has been hanging out with the Packers the past couple of days. So, Dan, what can you tell us about how the new offense is coming together?
Susie, if you were here watching the Packers practice the last couple of days, it looks like they're trying to put together a new offense. I mean, it looks like growing pains. It looks like confusion when they get to the line. It looks like it's taking too long to get to the line. The kinds of stuff you would expect to see, quite frankly, when things are new. Remember, they've only had pads on now for the last 2 or 3 days, so they really have just started working on the run game, which is such a critical, foundational part of this offense that Matt LaFleur wants to run. And he has talked about trying to mesh his concepts with things that Aaron Rodgers does well in terms of audibles at the line of scrimmage, getting them in and out of tight spots depending on what he sees from the defense. So they're really putting it together. One note, running back Aaron Jones missed today's practice with hamstring tightness, so that's worth watching as they continue to try and work on that run game. And in terms of the receivers behind Davante Adams, Matt LaFleur, their head coach, told me they're looking for some of those second-year guys to take a step forward. He specifically mentioned Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who caught a nice touchdown pass at the end of the two-minute drill practice from Aaron Rodgers today, although the defensive players thought he committed offensive pass interference, so they're actually going to go to the tape and see if they can review that. Because, you know, you can review that now.
Yeah, back to the tape. Okay, Dan, appreciate that. And as we leave Dan in Green Bay, off to Arizona and beyond, as once again we go NFL Nation on location.
The first overall pick has not been a disappointment for the Arizona Cardinals a week into training camp. Quarterback Kyler Murray has been impressive every day, showing off his arm strength, velocity, touch, and accuracy. And it's quite clear that Murray is comfortable in Cliff Kingsbury's air raid offense, showing a poise well beyond his years. But we won't be able to see Murray run the scheme until week 1 of the regular season. Cliff Kingsbury said on Tuesday that the Cardinals will run a vanilla offense during the preseason, leaving the unexpected and unknown air raid for the regular season.
De'Jon Bell and Jamison Crowder in large part to help Sam Darnold fulfill his potential. Darnold had the league's lowest completion percentage on passes in the 1 to 10 yard range, only 63%. But having Bell coming out of the backfield and Crowder in the slot will help that number. Crowder's ability to separate quickly shows up every day on the practice field. They already have good chemistry. Now, he did have a minor foot scare on Monday, but he's fine and he looked terrific in practice.
Colts backup quarterback Jacoby Brissett's first-team reps during the offseason were only supposed to be temporary until Andrew Luck resumed his starting role at the beginning of training camp. But now Brissett will continue to work with the first team after Luck recently suffered a setback with his calf strain. Offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni told me that one of the areas that Brissett has improved in is his ability to process the play. The Colts are optimistic that Luck will be ready for their Week 1 game at the Chargers, but Brissett does have starting experience if they have to turn to him. Brissett started 2 games as a rookie in New England, then he started 15 games with the Colts in 2017. Brissett's experience is one of the reasons why Colts general manager Chris Ballard has resisted trade offers for Brissett in the past.
What about the biggest upsets in the NFL? We created this Pick 6, 96 divisional playoffs, Jags and Broncos, the original Mile High Miracle, Broncos trailing late, John Elway, the touchdown pass to Ed McCaffrey. Oh, just so memorable. Now a 3-point game with a minute 50 to play. Ensuing onside kick, recovered by Jacksonville, head coach Tom Coughlin and the Jags upset the Broncos 30-27 in their second season of existence. 2010 wild card game, Seahawks-Saints, Marshawn Lynch unleashes Beast Quake, breaking tackle after tackle, including his stiff arm, 67-yard touchdown run to seal
off,
the
man.
Victory.
Get off.
The 7-9 Seahawks defeated the reigning Super Bowl champion Saints 41-36. 2012 divisional playoff, Broncos, Ravens, the other mile high miracle.
Oh,
Ravens down late, 3rd-and-3, Joe Flacco heaves one deep.
Oh my goodness.
Jacoby Jones calls it in for the touchdown. Check this out, guys. Ravens would kick the go-ahead field goal in overtime and win, beating Peyton Manning's Broncos and loot to a Super Bowl win.
Oof.
Super Bowl 36, Rams, Patriots, 7 seconds left. Adam Vinatieri kicks the go-ahead 48-yard field goal, clinching the Super Bowl win. Tom Brady-led Patriots upset Kurt Warner and the Rams 20-17.
That's
where it all began.
Where it all began.
Super Bowl 42, Giants, Patriots, 3rd-and-5, Eli Manning somehow escapes pressure. Downfield, David Tyree, just unbelievable helmet catch. One of the most iconic in history, catch, right? Wow.
Crazy. Rodney Harrison still gets fired up about
this. Rodney's strong.
Oh, yeah.
Later in the drive, Manning finds Plexico Burress for the game-winning touchdown. Giants upset the Patriots. That perfect season, gone. Biggest upset, Super Bowl III, Jets-Colts. Joe Namath went 17-28 for 206 passing yards, out-dueling Johnny Unitas in a game where no touchdowns were thrown. The Jets beat the Colts 16-7 in the largest upset in Super Bowl history. We call it a pick six, but there's actually a bonus. So it's a pick seven. This is for Mike and Damian, both involved in this game, the 2010 Jets, part of this huge upset.
Yeah, and to give this context, if you go back 6 weeks earlier, it's December of 2010, and we're playing the Patriots Monday Night Showdown for first place, and they wax us 45-3, and after the game, Rex gets up and said, if we play the Patriots tomorrow, we would blow them out. We would beat them. We're the better team. And we're like, oh, my gosh, Rex, what are you doing? Like, they just beat us 45-3 on national TV. Nope, we're the better team. 6 weeks later, what do? We go up there, we beat them.
I had a good view. I was watching on TV.
Great memories.